is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 430 in the series. This session shares the Franklin Mass School Committee Community Relations Subcommittee meeting that was held on Thursday, January 3rd, 2021. The meeting was conducted via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The agenda was short and simple: approval of the October meeting minutes, discussion on the legislative forum, and also a budget flyer that they update annually. The show notes contain the link to the meeting agenda. I did not take notes during the meeting as I participated much more than I usually do. The recording runs about 44 minutes, so let's listen in to the Community Relations Subcommittee meeting held on Thursday, January 7, 2021.
Call this Community Relations Subcommittee meeting to order at 3:32.
Denise, can you move a little bit closer to the microphone?
Okay. How's this?
Okay.
All right. Sorry.
Yeah, better.
Okay. All right. So 3:32, I will call the meeting to order. And before I take roll call, I would like to read the statement from Governor Baker. Per Governor Baker's order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, the public will not be allowed to physically access the school committee subcommittee meeting. Members of the public can access the meeting via remote conference. The school committee reserves the right to implement additional remote participation procedures and will notify the public of these procedures as soon as practicable. All right, great. And I will now take attendance. Ann Bergen.
Here, present.
Judy Pond Pepper.
Here.
Who got a lovely haircut. Very nice.
It depends on what day you look at it.
I understand. okay, so now, I know that I'd sent out the meeting minutes from October for everyone to review. Did they look all right? Did anyone?
They look fine. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so I should take a
roll. Want a motion to approve? So made. So moved.
And second, Denise.
Okay. All right. So I will call now for a roll call vote. Ann Bergen?
Yes.
All right. Judy Pond Pfeffer?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay. So I think the first item is for the legislative forum. I know Anne has been working, communicating with our speakers, and I guess March 1st is the tentative date?
It is Tuesday, March 2nd, actually.
March 2nd.
Yeah. It's, the first Tuesday. And clearly, every single person may not be able to come, but to get the three legislators' schedules, they all said that that's a Tuesday. We knew February vacation would... We couldn't use that Tuesday. We needed time to plan it and get communication out and stuff. So they were all free on Tuesday, March 2nd at 6:30.
And so this would just be a purely virtual Zoom meeting. Okay, just wanted to make sure. And then I guess the next part would be, I know last year, you know, Judy and I kind of joined after the planning had started. Is this when we should be talking about the questions that we'll be bringing up?
Denise, that's what I was thinking. I kind of, only because I've done it, this would be the fourth one, and it's not, and the way we kind of looked at the first planning meeting was to sort of say, okay, let's establish a time frame. Do we want it to be like an hour and a half? Because that will help us. Then what would be, the questions and topics that we as a subcommittee and with Sarah would want to, you know, get out there, and then we'd get more feedback from the full committee. Then the format, what would it look like? And then how would we communicate about it, you know, through Anne-Marie? And so it was sort of a four-pronged look at it, and that's how we had done it the last few times, Denise. So I'm just, you know, sharing that with you.
I'm looking at everything from last time. So I'm not sure how we should start. I'm sorry, I'm not better at this. I'm just wondering how we start coming about with questions to ask.
Well, you know what I was thinking about for the meeting. I was thinking about things we've already talked about at different meetings. So I was thinking, like, questions, for example, I'd like to ask about, you know, what about, like, how are they supporting the public health infrastructure so we can get kids back to school? What, you know, what kind of funding are they getting us? I was looking at what kind of supports are they getting us for mental health? So that would be another question I'd want to ask. What about, like, I'd like more information about the charter school and things like, so I'm just throwing out the ones I had. I know Judy would have specific questions, you would have, then we could get feedback from the rest of the committee. You know, maybe we could generate kind of the topics that we're most interested in and things that matter most through Sarah, you know, what are the, you know, the things that she sees as most vital, the kind of questions that, I mean, that's how I was thinking about it anyway, so.
One question that I would offer is, what does Senator Spilka in particular, because she was such a key person behind the Student Opportunity Act. I've been thinking about that because we have to do the Student Opportunity Act plan submission, although the funding kind of fell through the cracks based on the pandemic. So I'd be curious to know, if you don't mind me jumping in and just saying, you know, what's the future of the Student Opportunity Act? What do they kind of foresee? And it may be too early to say, but I'm just wondering about that.
And Denise, the Indigenous People Act thing, what's happening with that at a statewide level? So it takes the pressure off us to have to kind of, because we know in any funding for like anti-racism and things like that, that would be another one I'd have.
Now we're putting you on the spot, Judy, so you and I can come up with stuff.
I guess I'm always concerned with the money. You know, how much money are we getting? When are we getting the money? And what can we do with the money? Yep. And bottom line is, based upon the pandemic and based upon the change in federal leadership and the change from Kennedy to Auchincloss, et cetera, I don't know if this is too soon to be asking all these kinds of questions, because who knows? I mean, the rumor is, and it's on the television, that everybody's going to get a $2,000 stimulus as soon as Biden is put into office. You know, I mean, how do we know how much money that we're going to get from the federal government and the state government? And I mean, income is down, tax collection is down. You know, people are at the end of their seats and sometimes at the end of their tether, whether they're going to survive or not.
That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that.
That's just a rambling whatever, but it's...
Oh, I think that's a great question.
I think it's a great question too, because there actually may be some information that they have to share along those lines in terms of what they're sort of seeing. I think it's a great question. They've been so supportive this year. You know, we've been supplemented with the coronavirus relief funds. They've made a commitment to level fund Chapter 70 at FY20 amounts, and it's really remarkable, in my opinion, what the state has done to allow us to do what we need to do this year. You know, the CARES funding, the coronavirus relief funding, I know that it's all tied to federal stimulus, but it's just kept, I mean, it's how we're doing what we're doing, and it all costs more. So I would be very curious myself in terms of next year. We need continued support.
I think it does speak to perhaps Karen Spilka or one of the people to sort of even open it up. I was thinking in terms of is the governor passed a budget and very, very earmarked, very, very specific amounts of money in different categories, you know, very specific amount of money for Chapter 70, a specific amount of money for mental health, a specific amount for educational quality, things like that. I'd be curious to say, right now, what do they know now? And we, you know, by March 2nd, what do they see from this money that the governor has allocated? We don't know what else is going to come our way, but they said there was some extra money through that they were, you know, and they're using the stabilization fund. What does that mean for Franklin? I mean, I think it's great to hear this is what it's going to be for the state. What do they see now? I think that either Karen or Jeff or somebody should, whether that starts it or what does that look like for us? What does it look like for special ed? What does it look like for, you know, in the different areas that they know as of March 2nd? It could change, but at least to give us a sense of what they see then. I think that would be crucial to follow up with what Judy said.
I think that makes sense, but these people are politicians. They're not going to give you an answer that's going to be satisfactory because everything is changing on a daily basis. They can give you an estimate what they think might happen, but whether that's going to happen or not is you know.
You're right, but you're right, Judy. But I think in all of this too, it's so important, and I agree with you 100%. But at least for them to hear what our priorities are, what our needs are, and for the public to hear it, because obviously we're going to have a lot of people from the public here to say, and you know, and that's a big piece of what Sarah has done in the past is to say, this is what we need for our schools. We want you to hear it. We don't know how you're going to get us whatever funding you can get us. And if you're going to, you know, have mandates, then you better fund them, you know, things like that. But I think they may promise us a lot of stuff, but we at least have to get the needs out there on the table and to say, you know, technology, the needs are enormous. And you know, and I think that this gives us a vehicle and a way to do it, whether what they promise us or not, that you're right, that's the nature of politicians sometimes. But I don't know, I think it gives us that vehicle.
I think it's a great way to do it is to say, you know, we have X numbers of children, we need X amount of this for technology, X amount of this mm-hmm. for mental health, X amount of this for whatever, you know, whatever you can give us is greatly appreciated. But how do we plan for our future if we have no clue how much we have, what you're going to be able to provide for us?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm furiously writing this all down. I think these are all great starting points.
That's probably enough of the whole meeting right there. That's a whole hour and a half.
Yeah, we don't need any more.
How much money are we getting and when are we getting it?
Yep. And these are our needs, you know, and that's why when Sarah speaks so eloquently when at the last forums, I know she's spoken about, you know, all the good stuff and how the way we've done mitigating strategies and the pressures that have been on us, particularly the glaring needs now that we see that the pandemic has brought to light, you know, particularly in this day and age, the 21st century, the technology needs and the mental health needs are extraordinary. And having Sarah frame it around that and say, okay, what can you do for us? You know, it's these are our needs, and for because she does it so well, you know, to have that as a piece of it, you know, that it's almost like you're right, those are the that'll take up the whole meeting.
Welcome, thank you for coming.
Yes. And then hit the buzzer, Judy. You can hit the buzzer and say it's over.
Well, I was going to bring up the buzzer. I know we did it the last time and I think it worked very well. I think even though it's aggravating to hear those little in the background, it keeps people to 3 minutes. Otherwise, if you don't have any kind of a timing thing and just do it on your phone, some people go over 3 minutes, some people go less than 3 minutes. And the people that go over, everybody who's listening know that they've gone on for 3 minutes and they haven't been stopped.
Yeah.
So I have my buzzer, I'll buy a new battery.
Yep, get the battery. I remember last time you had to change it. Okay. So next, you know, once we pull this together, then would we present it at a meeting or do we just communicate it through email to the rest of the committee?
I know what we've done and possibly to think about it is to sort of say, these are the topics we've generated. I mean, I think it kind of should be at an open meeting. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, whatever we come up with as a subcommittee, we've, you know, identified 5 or 6 areas we'd like to really home in on with Sarah, whatever, you know, Sarah's needs are, what she wants to see addressed as well. And then say, does anyone want to add anything? And then from there, we can kind of prioritize and then put a time limit you know, decide if we want to have five questions, whatever, and then how much time we want to allocate so we can fit it in. If we, I don't know if you, if 6:30 to 8 is a good time frame, like an hour and a half, and then we kind of budget the time for how much time are we going to allocate for questions.
Yeah, I think last time, yeah, the last 30 minutes were for questions.
Yeah, and we have to have let the public ask questions also. I had a question I was going to ask you guys what you thought. In the past, and this maybe speaks to politicians talking too much or something, but we at the way we had structured it one time was we let them open, the politicians kind of open, and everybody have like 5 minutes. I was thinking maybe we hold that to the end, because then they get to frame the narrative, and I didn't know what you guys thought. Like, because they want to have a chance to say all they've done and have a chance to have a few minutes. We're inviting them there to, but at, to me, when they do it at the beginning, I was just going to throw that out, what you guys thought, you know.
Yeah, so last year, and you gave the introduction, and then Sarah spoke, I spoke, then the legislators each had 5 minutes to talk about their issues, and then we got to the questions. So do you want to flip that?
I was just going to pose that. I don't know what people thought. I just find that it's really our agenda, and it gives them a chance to take it off into different areas. But if we can home in on our questions and our needs before they go off and say, well, I got all this money for this and I've done this. And I don't know. That was my feeling. I just think I want them to have it, but I didn't know what you guys thought. I just thought it would be better at the end.
I think that makes sense. Because we are having the meeting, and it's this is the Franklin School Committee who's asking questions, and let them speak at the end, but only 5 minutes.
Exactly, Judy. Right, because they'll go on. Yeah. Yeah, and we'll let them know ahead of time, you know, and just say these, you know, as soon as we formulate it all, to say, you know, these are the five or six areas we want to have you be prepared to answer questions about. And then at the end, we're going to give you each 5 minutes, and we are going to time you, and we will have a buzzer. We're not going to do anything mean, but we're going to buzz the heck out of you if you go beyond the,
The buzzer will ring.
Yeah.
Boy is very familiar with the buzzer.
Yeah, he jumped every time it went off. It was...
Yeah, I like that idea. I'll change that in the format. Okay. All right. So we've got questions, and we've identified the format. And I guess, so let's see. So we've got Student Opportunity Act, the money, change in legislative leadership, the budget. So these are all things that I can bring to the full committee.
Yeah, just to say, yeah, general broad topics, yeah.
And ask them if they'd like to add anything.
Yeah.
You know, within a week to email the
Right, stuff. Good idea. Okay. I do think special ed should be in there, and transportation and all that, you know, transportation for special ed, that's a big one. Yeah, and then it makes sure everybody gets a chance to be involved. And Denise, I don't think I need to. I think I'm just going to say I don't need to speak at all. I think if you maybe just we can eliminate some of the time for like me being verbose. Just maybe if you do the introduction and then let Sarah speak. What do you think of that? I don't need to say anything.
I think that's a good idea. Not that you speak too much, Anne, but I think that's a good idea.
No, right, Judy. It gives more time for. Thank you. Yeah, I think. I think you're right. Judy jumped. Did you see how quickly?
Format.
She quickly.
Go, Denise. You go.
I'm with you, Judy. I agree. My husband says that all the time, so I hear you. So, I think there's no need for me to say anything. You open it, and then I think the important thing is that if Sarah's willing and you know, to sort of frame it for us, and then my questions will come through just like everybody else's, so that's good.
Okay. All right, so at this coming meeting, during the community relations portion, I'll just say this and ask for their input within a week.
Yeah,
that's Judy and Anne.
Yeah. And Denise, do you want me to just send a thing out to Jeff and say that this is 6:30 to 8 o'clock? I won't say anything. I'll just give them a lock it in the date, make sure that it's a Zoom meeting. I'll just, okay, if I do that, I'll just give them a broad thing. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Could you copy me?
Of course I will.
Thank you. All right. So I think that is, we've got the format and the questions. Sorry, I took a lot of notes. And then I'm sure Anne Marie, like last time, she's been sitting there so patient. she'll advertise it on Facebook, on the blog.
Yep, I'll get it out. I know last year we created a graphic that showed the legislators, and then we can share it in the newsletter. We can share it on the website. We had it as a bulletin, I believe, across all of the individual sites. And then obviously on social media, we'll put it in the paper, all of those, everywhere we can put it.
And I know, I'm looking at last year's notes, I know Sarah invited the chair of FinCom.
I think I sent an invitation to Jamie to then share with some of the town's elected officials, okay, which may have included FinCom in addition, definitely town council.
All right. Perfect. I think this is great. This was very productive. Yep. So I guess if there's nothing else on the legislative forum.
One other item, if I may.
Oh, sure, Steve.
Make sure to include Franklin TV schedule, assuming you want that live broadcast.
Oh, that's a good, yes.
Yes.
Write that down. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right, so the next agenda item was the budget flyer. So I know that the budget subcommittee wanted to meet, go over what was going to be on it before we kind of gave it to Anne Marie and she ran with it.
I don't think we're ready for that yet.
No?
I we definitely need to do it, but we haven't since that time. Denise, we've locked in a bunch of meetings coming up on like the 14th and the 21st and the 28th that are coming up. So I think, I don't know, Sarah, what do you think? Are we ready for that yet? Or
no, I was actually going to say, I think, from an agenda standpoint, when Denise and I were talking about today's agenda, I think it made sense to maybe talk about it and to talk about the sequencing of it and revisit the concept, because we talked about it at one point, I think, at the budget workshop back in November. But I do think that in terms of kind of the factual points that are going to go on to the flyer, yeah, I think we wanted a little bit more time to put that together, to see how things might be shaping up. We'll have the governor's budget by the end of the month. Budget subcommittee, I think should talk a little bit about it before, and then bring Anne and I can bring information from that group here to then put it together.
So, like, time frame, I'm looking at my calendar, like February.
Yeah, I think February is probably.
Do you think we could, should we talk about what we may, the big concepts we may want to have in there? For example, we may, like the last time we had just a factual, this is what per pupil spending is. I mean, do we want to, we could sort of talk about, mitigation strategies, the facts about Franklin that, we've had sort of a format that we've used before. This is what we've done to save money. These are our biggest needs. I mean, do we want to conceptualize what, and then we can fill it in with facts and figures. I don't know if we want to at least get started with that. Just a thought. I don't know.
I mean, I like how we've formatted it in the past.
Yeah.
I think that it's all important information that the public should know.
Yeah.
Per pupil spending, where the money goes, what we still need.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes we have to make it a little bit easier for the average person on the street to understand. The average person on the street understands that the kids go to school and there's a teacher in the classroom. But in today's world, there's not just a teacher in the classroom. There are a number of people in that classroom working with the students in that classroom. You know, it's not one teacher, 25 kids for the day. You know, when all these other people coming in and taking the kids out are doing it for the kids' benefit, you know, so that everybody doesn't lag behind, etc. You know, that's very simplistic, but people don't know that. I mean, I didn't know that coming into this school committee, that there were, because I've asked questions from the beginning, how come there were 28 teachers at Palm Mentor and you only have X number of schoolrooms? You know, where are all these people? What are they doing? Mm-hmm. And other people see that, you know, are very simplistic. You drive by Palm Mentor and just about every single parking place is filled all day long, you know, and you wonder, what are all these people doing in there, you know, when there's only so many classrooms? Yeah.
I think that's, I think one of the essential questions that I keep on hearing out, you know, from school committee, from Judy, but then it also comes in from other places as well. You will hear it at FinCom, for example, with respect to Sue Doosnap asking questions about headcount versus teaching FTE and teacher to student ratio. And so there's a whole story in there in terms of the enrollment decrease. We have actually kept up with class size and having enrollment driven reductions of classroom teachers, but at the same time the needs of students have expanded. We have more social and emotional support for kids through school psychologists and counselors. There's more Title I support. We've been, I think, pretty creative too in terms of our staffing to try to maximize the same number of dollars, but think about different roles in different ways. For example, we could have hired last year, we could have hired a BCBA, one BCBA, and instead the BCBAs said, no, hire two RBTs, same price, we'll supervise the RBTs. It's a slightly different training, but because we hired two RBTs, we were able to kind of maximize the same dollar value. So then headcount appears to be higher, but we're thinking, I think, kind of creatively around roles and responsibilities. So there is a whole narrative around that. And I guess I'm thinking, as we talk about the budget flyer with Anne Marie's skills, I think we want to have kind of a printed version, but we have much less face-to-face interaction with people at this time. So is there a way to have that printed version, but then take it to maybe a more interactive level? Miriam has been working on a video with Anne Marie around the budget. Tim had talked about that at the budget workshop. So is there a way to sort of maybe format some of these pieces to pull in some of the work that we've already done, like the roles and responsibilities of different staff members in the school, the video that Miriam is putting together, to kind of maybe just, not to necessarily change some of the conceptual information that's here, because just I have it actually up on my screen, and as I'm looking at it, I think it's really good. But I think there's some pieces that we could add in maybe an interactive format that touch upon some of the other questions that are percolating out there.
If I could just interject, I agree. As I was listening to everyone, my mind is spinning of different ways that we can present the information. I've been working with Miriam in Canva. I have a professional level of Canva, and you can create these great presentations with a little video in the bottom corner that speaks while you're you can record yourself and explaining the slide, and it can be saved as a website, so it doesn't have to be live necessarily, but you could certainly have a voice giving a lot more context to some of the imagery. We could certainly add any links that were needed. There's so many things that we could do once we knew the content. And as I was listening to what Judy was saying about, you know, how to explain information, I think it's important to explain it in different ways. And when I look at the budget flyer that we did before, there's so much text, which, and I know all of it is important, but I'm wondering if there's any information that we gather that could be presented in a different format, whether it's by a graph or by a some sort of a visual element, because some people connect to that easier than they connect to a long string of text. So I think once we have the information, we can come up with the best ways to present it, in depending upon what the information is.
If I think I a graph add, can also
picking up on a couple of points, your target market potentially would be parents and grandparents. You need to tell them the story of what's happening in the classroom today versus when they were in the classroom with the one teacher and the 25. So the work that you've already done in terms of the different roles and responsibilities, you could do much more of an integrated, you know, this is the classroom, this is the room and the teachers, but then the people coming in for this population, English language, etc., that would come out nicely via graphics and video, etc. And granted, it's complex. You can make, you don't have to tell every little nuance, but you at least have to lead them down the path that it's considerably changed from when we were sitting in the classrooms in the 60s and 70s.
It's even different from when I was in the classroom in the 80s, you know, that's right. And I think there's so much that has changed. And I love Steve's idea of sort of setting the stage of, you know, this is what a classroom, typical classroom was like in this age level. This is the typical classroom at this time. This is the classroom today. Like I said, we can certainly get creative with the graphics and ways to, you know, display the information and share the information in engaging ways that may just capture the audience's attention.
Because that kind of interface to continue along would also then set the stage that for a particular student, call it ELL or a particular special category, then you could also get into the point where at such point in time, the student services to be delivered in-house can't be done appropriately. And thereby you can even get into the, whether it's the transportation or the out of district, or you can get into the other Reach, Strive, other programs, so you still have those support services in the classroom, in the buildings, in the district, which in fact does save money over time, because that's another nuance that keeps coming up from the community and I know other conversations.
I don't want to play devil's advocate, but one of the difficulties that just occurred to me, if you show the classroom of today with all these people in it, and the classroom of, as compared to the classroom of yesterday, some people will say, well, gee, the classroom of yesterday, people graduated, they went to different colleges, they had a good education. Why do we need to have all these people in the classroom? Can't they just get just as good of an education without them? You know, so, I mean, I think it's a smart way to do it, but there was a drawback to it, because somebody might say, well, hey, you know, I went with only one teacher and look what I did. And, you know, why do the kids now need 22 teachers to come and do it?
Yeah, I think that sets up, clearly the school folks can do it much more eloquently. My time in the classroom as a teacher was many, many years ago. But I think that sets you up, Judy, to address that particular issue. Because then those other specialists are now mandated also, in many cases, to deliver those types of services. Point,
to make sure that we're doing this because we are told sometimes that we have to do it, you know, to make sure that every student has the full access to a quality education.
Yep.
And the other point, and, you know, not that I would bring it up or, you know, I have is no one takes these kids. That's, like I say it all the time, the public schools, that's our the joy, that, you know, the beauty of public schools. They don't go to Severian. They don't go to the charter school. They don't go to any of those private schools. They don't take those kids. It's our obligation. It's our joy. It's our challenge, but that's what public schools are. And, you know, and that meeting their needs and like Sarah was saying, the incredible behavioral and social emotional needs of kids today. There's no comparison what technology has done, what social media has done, what substance use has done. This is a different world. And that's the piece of the education I think that has to get out there. And then to be competitive. So our kids are just as competitive to get into the colleges and to compete. The world looks a lot different. And technology is at the core of all of it. And professional development for technology is so expensive. And the infrastructure for technology, all you have to do is talk to Tim Raposa for 2 seconds, and people don't even understand how expensive technology is. And it's a different world. Just like Anne-Marie was saying, even in just in the last 10 years, the technology is changing dramatically. You know, it's, and we're seeing it now with the whole COVID thing, you know, and the amount of money and the cost of training people and, you know, supporting it. So
there's an income piece too. That's an income disparity that's grown. And I have a graph somewhere from a couple of years ago, but, you know, basically our free and reduced price lunch numbers have doubled in 10 years while we reduced population by 1,000. The percentage has doubled in 10 years while we reduced population by 1,000. So in total numbers, that is a bigger, that's an even bigger increase mm-hmm. than double yeah. in terms of socioeconomics. And so I think, you know, what we're seeing in the schools is that, just like you hear elsewhere, like the polarization of income, and that's going to be exacerbated as a result of the pandemic, because, you know, this is so hard on so many people.
Yeah. So
those needs, it does provide an opportunity to tee up the conversation around needs being different. And I have it in text. So the video, you know, I think we've got tools that we can build off of already and just sort of modernize the message. So we have it in text from some previous memos or presentations that have been done.
It's so funny too, though, Sarah, when you think about it. When I was, you know, in high school, there were sort of like four majors that people went into a college. There was teaching, I guess, you know, there was medicine. There were like four things. Now, when you look at the, with media and all of the different places where kids are going to end up working out in the world, to prepare them for that world and what the skills that they're going to need for all of those opportunities that are out there, it's so different. You know, I mean, I think that's something that we get, you know, through our portrait of a graduate, is sort of we're preparing kids for that world, you know. So I think the more we stress that, the better, you know.
You'll be preparing kids for jobs that don't have a name today.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be important, no matter what format we use, that we need to be cognizant of the fact that the senior center still has to get all the information, because I know that we like to send out the information there. So like the video and the links, it might be lost. So I mean, so we'll have to do we have to have two different formats to make sure that we do include?
I think if you have the meeting itself, the video of the full meeting, and then potentially you could take subsections of that out, some key topics, certainly the legislation updates. In some cases, they would be respectfully more important than others. But we can certainly craft appropriate discussions for the senior center. Because at least from call it the grandparent perspective, the tax perspective, those are going to be their focal points. Mm-hmm. And particularly in the pandemic, assisting the classroom when the kids are home, they've been doing that. So they're going to be much more interested in asking questions than potentially they were before, because now school is home, where school was in school before. But with some of the things that we're doing, and particularly of my role in Franklin Matters and integrating with the TV and then working now as a senior center, more closely with the senior center, we can help, you know, facilitate some of those things. I know the town council has the regular coffee hour. I think if you don't choose to go participate as that, I would highly recommend having your own coffee hour with the senior center. I think there's enough topics on a regular basis that addressing even 5 or 10 people at a time, that's 5 or 10 people at a time, they're going to help you down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The senior center also has a group that does a calling to seniors that are at home, you know, where they give them certain information, et cetera, and they sort of a well-being check-in. Maybe we could have some kind of a format or of a information that we could provide to that call out to those various seniors during the week. The worst thing they can do is hang up on us.
And I know of, in working with Erin Rogers, who's the new senior center director, she's wonderful, and I've talked to her many times about different ways that they're reaching out to their community right now, because to Judy's point, there are some people who are at home and are not going anywhere, and they're not connected in other ways, so the phone call is their connection. So if I reach out to Erin, she's always just, she knows her community best, so she's usually a great resource at, just to know the best way to get the information to the seniors.
If you don't mind, that would be helpful. Just next time you talk to her.
I actually have to call her tomorrow, so I'll talk to her tomorrow.
That's great. Good.
And there's always an opportunity. Certainly you've heard with Elise and Sarah, we've done that audio piece. As you got things in preparation for the legislative forum or coming out of the forum, I'm here and ready and able to help at any point in time. Your message is needed and I can help.
Thank you, Steve. All right, let me write that down. Sorry, I'm furiously taking notes. Okay. All right, so budget, flyer, next month, all this. Do we want to try and schedule our next meeting while we have everybody together?
I think that's a good idea, Denise.
Okay. So I was thinking maybe the last week of January to give everyone a chance to get back to me with their own questions they'd like to add and to hear back from the
list
about... does Thursday the 28th at 3:30 work? Figure this time seems to...
I know we have a tentative budget subcommittee, but we've only got it a placeholder, but that's not till 4:30. That might be too much though for... It's not, we haven't necessarily scheduled them. We've just kind of blocked it out as a possibility. I don't know, Sarah, what do you think?
I don't mind doing them back to back.
I don't either. Yeah, so we could do that at 3:30 would be good.
And the date is the 23rd?
It's your 28th.
28th, okay.
Do you want to do 3 o'clock just so you have a little breathing room between?
Can that work for people?
It's fine with me.
3 o'clock's fine.
All right, January 28th, 3 p.m. All right, love it. All right. So if anyone has anything else? No?
No, good job.
I'm looking for a motion to...
adjourn. Motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Judy. And I'll second that.
Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
All right. Roll call vote, Ann Bergen?
Yes.
Judy Pfeffer?
Yes.
The lovely haircut.
Denise, you didn't vote.
Oh, yes. I want to go. I do. I want to go.
That's true, too.
time with you guys. All right, so time being 4:16, I call this subcommittee meeting adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Sounds good. Thank you, everyone.
Good job.
Thanks, everyone.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.